Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SGS Nation? Welcome to this live breaking coverage of Surviving the Survivor. It is the podcast that promises to bring you the very best guest in all of true crime. We've made a commitment, supposed to start in 2025, but I guess we're close enough to bring you breaking news in true crime, and we got plenty of it lately. And today, breaking right now, a New York City grand jury has indicted Luigi Mangione on charges that include first-degree murder in the ambush killing of United Healthcare CEO. This is per NBC News. Of course, Luigi Mangione is accused of an assassination of the United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, back on December 4th. Of course, he was found. Luigi Mangione was found and spotted in Altoona, Pennsylvania, of all places, a McDonald's. And that's where an elderly person reportedly saw him, kind of waved over a McDonald's employee. Together, they reached out to local police, and then the arresting officer, he's been on the job 6 months, and he's the one that hauled Luigi Mangione in. And now detectives, the NYPD, along with prosecutors, say that it's their guy, that he is the guy who killed Brian Thompson. Again, if you're just joining us, number one, Luigi Mangione has been indicted on first-degree murder charges, which is interesting because in New York City, I'm not a lawyer, but first-degree is reserved for the most heinous of crimes against law enforcement officers, things of this nature. Typically, it's a second-degree charge, but as you just heard, according to NBC News, he was just indicted by a grand jury in Manhattan on a first-degree murder charge. Now, other news related to him, he's expected to waive his extradition. Right now, Space Coast, whenever you're ready, you can bring it up just so we can watch together. This is a live picture of the Manhattan DA. He is Alvin Bragg, and he is about to come out and update the public. He is expected to, of course, say that a grand jury just indicted Luigi Mangione on these first-degree murder charges. Again, that is unusual.
Giving you a three-minute warning, approximately,
for New York City.
So we should be starting relatively close to on time.
The old famous three-minute warning. Usually it's a two-minute warning, but today they gave a three. Space, I got it muted on my end. I'll unmute her. You can. Two New York press conferences in one day, according to Buttercup. This is it. Said we're going to start to take breaking news when it pertains to true crime. And that's what we're doing here. So, again, we are awaiting now this news conference with Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg. Professor Joe Petuto may hop on to help break down some of this stuff. Now, again, one of the things that is supposed to be talked about today is that Luigi Mangione, who was originally fighting extradition, is expected to now waive his extradition rights. But also, simultaneously, a spokesperson for New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who replaced Andrew Cuomo, the spokesperson for the governor, says that the governor herself is going to file an extradition order and paperwork as soon as an indictment is handed down, and that just happened. So I guess she is filing paperwork and is going to work in concert with Governor Josh Shapiro, the Commonwealth of PA, who's got some business to attend to when it comes to Ellen Greenberg. And that's a story I'm trying to hop back on, but that is neither here nor there at the very moment. Cynthia in Spain, one thing I don't have is a lot of energy. It might be able to fake it, but I'm typically exhausted and no different today. Yes, the New York attorney is the wife of Diddy's attorney, Agnifilo. I always mispronounce it. So her name is Karen Friedman Agnifilo. Her husband represents Sean Diddy Combs. She was a former, I think, an assistant DA or DA in New York, in Manhattan. She is going to represent Luigi Mangione. So that is when weird worlds collide in true crime. Of course, Luigi Mangione, he's accused of killing Brian Thompson, again, the CEO of United Healthcare. It happened. You guys all saw it, that crazy video, December 4th, gunned down in cold blood. It was the day that he was being laid to rest, the following Monday, that Luigi Mangione was arrested in Altoona, PA, at a McDonald's. Interestingly, he had a mask on and took it down, and so many people said he just walked in there without his mask. They think he may have gotten away, but it was the, I don't know, the surreptitious nature, even in a COVID world, the people, at least in that part of the country, thought it was strange or odd that he had this mask on, and then he takes it off. I understand a lot of people still do wear masks, but the general consensus was he may have slipped by had he not had that mask on. Now, in New York, he was facing second-degree murder charges, but now it has been bumped up to first degree, and we will hear from DA Alvin Bragg in a moment. He is a Manhattan district attorney, and we are waiting. We just heard probably 2 minutes ago a three-minute warning, so at any moment, Alvin Bragg is going to pop up and pop out and tell us exactly what is going on. Before I forget, there's this other wild story out of Miami with New York Roots. Here is Alvin Bragg. I will unmute and we will listen in right now.
Good afternoon. I'm Alvin Bragg, Manhattan District Attorney. I'm honored and privileged to be joined by Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch. First and foremost, I want to extend my deepest condolences to Mr. Thompson's loved ones and colleagues. His family deserves our respect as they continue to grieve. Our work will never be able to undo the fact that a life was lost. We are here to announce that Luigi Mangione, the defendant, is charged with one count of murder in the first degree and two counts of murder in the second degree, including one count of murder in the second degree as an act of terrorism. For the brazen, targeted, and premeditated shooting of Brian Thompson, who, as you know, was the CEO of United Healthcare. This case was made possible by the collaborative efforts of the phenomenal public servants you see before you today, and so many others who are not here. I'm honored to lead the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and privileged to serve alongside Assistant District Attorneys Joel Seidman, Kristen Bailey, and Zachary Kaplan, who were working from the outset hand in hand with the greatest police department in the world. Chief of our trial division, Lisa Del Pizzo, and the Deputy Chief, Chris Prevost, provided sage oversight and direction. And I want to acknowledge our high technology analysis unit. There was a lot to be processed here. Steve Moran, in particular, who heads that, and Marco Popic. We are privileged here at the DA's office to work every day with the phenomenal public servants at the NYPD. It has been a distinct pleasure to work besides Commissioner Tisch, an exemplary partner, and Chief of Detectives Joseph Kinney. Almost every day we're in touch, and his leadership is second to none. And then Deputy Commissioner Rebecca Weiner, who, as I tell her, there are a lot of challenging things happening in the world, and I sleep better at night knowing that she is the Deputy Commissioner in charge of terrorism. The detectives on this, out doing the courageous frontline work, Detective Oscar Diaz, Detective Curcio, exemplary, the finest. It wasn't just those of us here in New York. I want to acknowledge the great work of our partners in Altoona, the Altoona Police Department, the Blair County District Attorney's Office, the governors of New York and Pennsylvania, the FBI, and of course, the brave members of the public who answered the call when our great commissioner put out the call for their assistance. This was a frightening, well-planned, targeted murder. that was intended to cause shock and attention and intimidation. It occurred in one of the most bustling parts of our city, threatening the safety of local residents and tourists alike, commuters and business people just starting out on their day. Let me say a bit more about the charges. They include one count of murder in the first degree as a killing in furtherance of terrorism, two counts of murder in the second degree, one charging that the killing was done as an act of terrorism, and the second pertaining to the fact that the killing was intentional. The maximum penalty possible for murder in the first degree and murder in the second degree as an act of terrorism is life without parole. The maximum penalty for murder in the second degree is 25 years to life. There are additional counts as well. A number of criminal possession of weapon charges, two counts in the second degree, four counts in the third degree, one count in the fourth degree, and a count of criminal possession of a forged instrument in the second degree. Let me tell you a bit about the facts. On November 24th, we allege that the defendant arrived in New York City to murder Brian Thompson. After the defendant arrived in New York City on a bus at Port Authority, he checked into the hostel on the Upper West Side using the name Mark Rosario with a fake New Jersey ID. On the morning of December 4th, the defendant left the hostel, just after 5:30 a.m. and traveled to Midtown. For nearly an hour, we allege the defendant waited in the area near the Hilton Hotel, waiting for Mr. Thompson to appear. From 6:38 a.m. to 6:44 a.m., the defendant stood across from the entrance of the hotel on West 54th Street. When he saw Mr. Thompson, he crossed the street and approached him from behind. We allege he then took out a 9mm 3D printed ghost gun, equipped with a 3D printed suppressor, and shot him once in the back and once in the leg. The defendant then fled northeast on 54th Street and took an e-bike uptown before getting into a taxi that took him to West 178th Street and Amsterdam Avenue. On December 9th, the defendant was spotted at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. The local police were notified, he was arrested, and he was found with a 9mm handgun, a suppressor, two ammunition magazines, and the same fake New Jersey ID he used at the hostel. I want to say a word about ghost guns. These weapons are increasingly proliferating throughout New York City and the entire country. Involving technology will only make this problem worse. Last year, over 80 ghost guns and ghost gun parts were recovered in Manhattan alone. The NYPD and the Manhattan DA's office have been leading in the interdiction of these ghost guns. And one thing I want to make clear, they are unserialized. They can be printed out. But as this case tragically makes clear, they are just as deadly as traditional firearms. This will remain a priority for us here in Manhattan. Finally, I know there have been questions about the extradition process. The latest that I can offer you is that the defendant is currently scheduled to appear in court in Pennsylvania on Thursday morning, first for a preliminary hearing on his Pennsylvania charges. Immediately to follow that will be an extradition hearing. We have indications that the defendant may waive that hearing, in which case he'd be brought to New York forthwith. In any event, we have been preparing on parallel paths, and before the hearing, we'll send to the governor of the state of New York the paperwork that would be necessary if he does not waive during that hearing. I now want to turn over to our great commissioner, and when I do so, I wanted to thank her for her partnership, not only on this matter, but on all we do every day together. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. The unsealing of today's indictment brings us one step closer to securing justice for Brian Thompson and his family and affirming the primacy of the rule of law in the city of New York. NYPD detectives worked tirelessly to piece this case together. And along the way, the Manhattan DA's office made sure we had every legal tool available to us. whether quickly providing subpoenas to assist with our evidence collection or traveling with us to Altoona, Pennsylvania last week after the apprehension, our partnership made this a successful investigation. So I'd like to thank District Attorney Bragg and his team for their work in bringing this case forward. Part of that work included the relentless collection and analysis of surveillance video by our detectives, which ultimately produced a clear image of our suspect. That image was shared far and wide through the media, and thanks to an observant McDonald's customer and the employee who alerted the police, Mr. Mangione was quickly brought into custody. This outcome is why we always emphasize the critical role of the public in our public safety mission. So again, I want to thank everyone who saw something, said something, and did something. That is why we have a suspect in custody today. As DA Bragg said, Luigi Mangione is now formally charged and indicted for murder. And let me be perfectly clear. In the nearly 2 weeks since Mr. Thompson's killing, we have seen a shocking and appalling celebration of cold-blooded murder. Social media has erupted with praise for this cowardly attack. People ghoulishly plastered posters threatening the CEOs, other CEOs, with an X over Mr. Thompson's picture, as though he was some sort of a sick trophy. And yesterday, the New York Post reported that some extreme activists were circulating a deck of cards with other most wanted CEOs to be targeted for assassination. These are the threats of a lawless, violent mob who would trade in their own vigilantism for the rule of law that protects us all. Let me say this plainly. There is no heroism in what Mangione did. This was a senseless act of violence. It was a cold and calculated crime that stole a life and put New Yorkers at risk. We don't celebrate murders and we don't lionize the killing of anyone. And any attempt to rationalize this is vile, reckless, and offensive to our deeply held principles of justice. Now, as we await the extradition process in Pennsylvania to complete, we continue our public safety work here at home. That includes our focus on the growing threat of ghost guns, one of which was used in this attack. The NYPD remains committed to tracking down and removing these untraceable weapons from our streets. And we will do that work hand in hand with District Attorney Bragg here in Manhattan and in every other borough to ensure that those who possess, distribute, and use these weapons are held fully accountable. Finally, I want to again thank every member of the NYPD, uniform and civilian, working on this case, led, of course, by our great Chief Kenny, whether in Midtown North Squad, Homicide, Crime Scene Unit, Intelligence Bureau, and everywhere else. All of you contributed to today's indictment, and you've brought the Thompson family one step closer to justice in this case. Thank you.
Sure. So, in its most basic terms, this was a killing that it was intended to evoke terror. And we've seen that reaction. The statutory elements we can go into, but its most basic term, that's what this is. This was not an ordinary killing, not to suggest that any killing is ordinary, but this was extraordinary. And the New York State Legislature has set out both the paths that we talk about, both the murder one and murder two. And this, we allege, is certainly squarely within those statutes, which talk about intending to do exactly what we saw happen here.
So the original missing report took place back in November 18th in San Francisco. The sergeant that was involved in that case reached out to the San Francisco field office and said, hey, basically, I'm working on a missing case. I saw the photograph that was distributed by the NYPD. There bears a resemblance. That tip was forwarded to us close to 45 hours after the incident took place. It showed up to a TFO, which is a task force officer. We have NYPD officers embedded with the FBI. They received that tip. It was one of four tips that they had received that day, and they were vetting it. Part of that vetting process was that they reached out Mangione's mother in San Francisco very late on the 7th. They had a conversation where she didn't indicate that it was her son in the photograph, but she said it might be something that she could see him doing. So that information was going to be passed along to the detectives the next morning, but fortunately we apprehended him before that we could act on that.
Well, I want to echo the commissioner's words and concerns, which I think were put forth beautifully. I mean, we see a lot in these jobs. I meet with the families of homicide victims, and I just can't wrap my head around the notion that someone is celebrating this. To your specific question, you know, we're at the beginning of a litigation now with our charge. We have a phenomenal trial team in place, led by ADA Joel Seidman, who has been in this office for more than 40 years and handled some very challenging matters. We have a voir dire process in place. I have faith in our jury system to select 12 people who can be fair and impartial, but we'll move forward, and that's something well down the road, but we'll be ready when that time comes. Sure, and the statute talks about attempts to influence or coerce a civilian population. The statute talks about intending to influence a policy of government. And it talks about seeking to, put forth things sort of similar to that by murder. So the statute, the plain language of the statute is clear. Obviously, we've charged it. The grand jury has voted on it, and we intend to go forward and prove it. But I think it does help to take a step back, and think about the proof in the case, some of the writings. I'm not going to get into too much of that, but and the actual reaction. In the middle of Midtown, the beginning of a busy day, tourists, commuters, business people, the intent was to sow terror. I'm not going to talk about communications with the family other than to say that we have a robust survivor services staff here that is second to none, but I would not talk about communications with any family. I don't think it'd be appropriate, but I appreciate your concern. I echo what the commissioner said, and the sentiment of your question, my heart goes out to it. I mean, this is a significant piece of what we do here, is we center the trauma of survivors and victims and their families. A significant piece of what I do is sit across the table and look people in the eye, and when appropriate, if they want to, offer a hug. And we have dedicated advocates and counselors and great staff that focuses on that. So I agree completely with you. And I wish that that's where the public's focus was exclusively. That's where it should be. That's where it is here, in addition to obviously the facts and the law and the case. But because of respect for where your question is coming from, I'm not going to get into communications.
Yes, absolutely. And we've seen a real increase, sustained increase since December 4th in concern, not just from CEOs, but from corporations broadly. And so going back to the DA's point, the intent to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, which is, of course, at the root of our state terrorism statute, is very much borne out in this reaction. And for good reason. We've had a torrent of online threats. We've had real world activity that the police commissioner flagged, which is abhorrent, and it causes concern. So we have done a lot to work with corporate security partners with whom we partner on a daily basis in this city, at the city level, at the state level, trying to make sure that everybody has the best practices that they need, that they know where to flag not just general ambient concerns, but specific threats that they might be receiving that a few weeks ago they might have written off as just noise in the online environment, that they now take seriously. So these are ongoing conversations that we have. And thanks to all the work that we do together every day, we're quite confident that concerns and threats are going to be appropriately directed our way.
So I'll address the first piece. The first degree murder statute has a number of subsections. They're sort of clearly delineated, and they are reserved for the most abhorrent conduct, killing a police officer, serial killing, And the terrorism is one subsection of that. And so I would say, fortunately, that's not happening a lot. Taking a step back, I can't think of another office that is more equipped to handle a terrorism charge. We have a great terrorism unit. We were at the forefront of getting the statute passed. Within the last 2 years, we've tried two very significant terrorism cases, one involving an English-speaking operative based in Jamaica, and another involving someone who was here and funding overseas terrorism by cryptocurrency. So we have the expertise, and as I mentioned, the expertise on this team, and so we're prepared to go forward. Yeah, I'm not going to go beyond what's in the filing. So as a matter of practice, I don't talk about sentencing outside of court for, as a first matter, and certainly not at the initial stages of a matter. But I think you can tell the seriousness with which we take this matter by the way in which it's charged. The murder in the second degree actually has a mandatory life without parole sentence, no discretion for the judge at all. So that's the maximum there. But I'm not going to go beyond that. We will first get the defendant to New York. We will have him arraigned. We will be before our judge. We will engage in pretrial litigation. If there's a trial, we're ably equipped to do that. And then we will proceed to sentencing, at which point we'll make our arguments in court. Thank you all so much.
There you have it. There's a press conference and some interesting headlines there. That is that was Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg and Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch, along with the Chief of Detectives Joe Kenny. Before I get to the actual news that I was talking about off the top, which is a grand jury indictment on first degree murder, second degree murder, and some terrorist charges. To me, the most interesting piece of information that just came out of this entire news conference was when Chief of Detectives Joe Kenny, who's really the primary investigator on this, the one that was running the whole team of NYPD detectives, who was in Pennsylvania, he's been on top of it from the beginning. He clarified. So Luigi Mangione's mother reported him missing on November 18th. She hadn't spoken with him since July. So it's August, September, October. So that's 4 months. Now, so she reports him missing November 18th. A sergeant in the San Francisco Police Department who handles missing persons said it bared a resemblance to the missing person. Luigi Mangione calls it into the NYPD, as any good sergeant would. They say it was one of four tips received that day. He said the NYPD was embedded with the FBI. So I guess they were crazed. So I guess the next day, maybe it was on the 7th of December, they reach out to Luigi Mangione's mother. They ask her to ID the photo. She says she can't ID the picture. This is the most interesting part to me, Joe Pituto. But she tells the people investigating, I could see that that is something he might do. Luigi Mangione's mother, I could see that that is something he might do. That's a kind of amazing and a critical piece to this puzzle. Am I overplaying it or overstating it?
Not to me, you're not. I thought it was extraordinary comment from the mother also. Obviously, she at least had observed behaviors in him or comments in him that led her to be very concerned. I mean, part of that is the, you know, putting in the missing persons report for an adult child who's been, you know, out of touch for 3 or 4 months. But the comment certainly sounds as though the family had some indications that something was seriously wrong with him.
Yeah. So let's go over, you know, sort of the legal headlines here. We've got the best University of Nebraska law professor emerita, Joe Pituto, the professor, Prof. Poe. So, of course, this was Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, along with Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch. And as I said, the Chief of Detectives, Joe Kenny. He says, Alvin Bragg does, that the grand jury has indicted Luigi Mangione. But what's interesting, Joe, it's on a first degree Right. Murder charge. So one count of first degree murder with killing in the furtherance of terrorism. Let's stop it right there. There's other charges. Some people already worked up about this, feeling like they're making a quote unquote example out of Luigi Mangione, but he did at least terrorize the city for a time and terrorize a lot of executives, which I know a lot of people don't have much empathy for, and I'm sure those executives are still on edge. But New York City and New York, they don't generally charge in the first degree. Why are they doing it here, Joe?
Well, New York has an interesting way that it does murder. Murder, too, is essentially what would be first-degree murder in a lot of jurisdictions. And New York differentiates, and terrorism is the thing that here that's triggering the difference. The statute came after 9/11. And, of course, New York had already experienced the earlier terrorism at the World Trade Center. And so the statute was a legislature's response to 9/11. And terrorism, as you heard Bragg describe it, is intending to intimidate or coerce the civilian population, or intending to influence government policy or a government unit. So here, if you take him at what at least the reports have been as to why he targeted this executive, he thought that the American healthcare system was in a shambles and he wanted to bring attention to it. I don't think it's a big leap to say that he was doing the act with the intent to influence government action. In other words, to change the healthcare system or to put in regulations about how insurers work. Bragg centered on the other part of the definition, which is intending to intimidate a civilian population. And that's going to be a matter of proof at trial as to whether he had that intent. And certainly the fact that there were people who were intimidated or scared is one aspect of it. The other aspect would be, if that's the way they're going after it, whether they'll be able to show that that's what he was intending to do. But they've got two ways to go at it. The other is intent to influence government policy. And if you think of terrorism, terrorism, when you do a criminal act, typically you don't have grandiose purposes. It's you're trying to kill somebody because you want his money, or you're trying to kill somebody because you don't want to have to go through a divorce. You don't want to lose custody of children. It's a more particular focus. Here, the argument is, and I think they've got some merit, that the killing of this executive was not because the executive, particularly in his own right, did anything to injure this defendant or this suspect or anybody else. It was an attack on the grander system, and he picked out this executive to do it. In other words, he could have picked out a different executive at this insurer, or he could have picked out another healthcare person, or he could have picked out the chief executive officer of a major hospital. Could have picked out a number of people to further the grander interest, and that's what throws us over into the possibility of a terrorism charge.
Yeah, this case is super wild and interesting, to say the least. Chris Robinson letting us know. Karen Friedman, Agnifilo, is the attorney for him, at least right now. Looks like she's going to be. But for Sean Diddy Combs, it's her husband, Mark. So talking about a powerful legal couple. This is interesting. The COE was just telling me about this. I had no idea. Apparently, so the family, Luigi Mangione's family, is extremely wealthy, generational wealth. And apparently grandma put something in to her trust saying that there would be no inheritance if anyone was charged with a felony. There are some other sorts of things there. So this brings me full circle, and I'm not pointing fingers, but that was, again, a really strange comment from the mother. First of all, I think it's unusual having that good a look, and maybe I'm wrong. That she said she just could not ID him. I mean, I'm going to take her at her word. But then Joe Petuto, the fact that she said, and this is what Joe Kenny relayed to the public today, when, again, for those who are just joining us, Luigi Mangione's mother reported him missing in November 18th. They had stopped talking in July. So you fast forward 4 months, she reports him missing finally. Then the sergeant working the case in San Francisco, she filed the report in San Francisco, I guess not realizing he was living in Honolulu. So she files this report in San Francisco. Sergeant in San Francisco sees the surveillance stills and calls into the NYPD. The NYPD eventually calls the mother, Luigi Mangione's mother. And again, she tells them, like, didn't ID him. I didn't think it was my son, but I could see it being something that he would do, which bears the question, as hard as it is there any culpability here on the part of the mother, the father, the family? And now it looks like there's something having to do with, you know, the trust and money related to being a convicted felon, which is another just weird twist in this entire story. But Joe, again, to the mother and the father, what do you think investigators are doing on that end? And from a legal perspective, what could happen?
Well, there's no direct criminal culpability. Our system doesn't require that you report suspicion about a crime that may be going on. But certainly, you might say there's moral culpability if they thought that there was something imminent that he might do, or they thought there was a realistic chance that he would do it. It is evidence with regard to his conduct and his actions that might well be admissible at trial to go to show these charges or to show the particular intent he might have had, which would throw it to terrorism, and me would be relevant to that. With regard to the grandmother, I'd be interested in knowing whether that was the condition she had for all the grandchildren and the trust and when she did it. If it turns out that she put that in within the last, 8 months or a year, and it's specific to him, then again, it would be relevant to and possibly admissible with regard to his state, his intent.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to rewind this. Yeah, you probably should. Again, if you're just joining us, the real headline here is Luigi Mangione has been indicted in New York State on a first-degree murder charge, which is somewhat rare in New York State. And by the way, that there is no death penalty in New York, so that is a maximum sentence of life without parole. And on the second-degree murder charge, Joe, it is 25 years to life. Now, again, there was first-degree murder charge, killing and furtherance of terrorism is the way Alvin Bragg described it. Then two counts in the second degree, and then a separate charge of an act of terrorism. So let's break this down. Why two counts in the second degree if you're murdering one person? How does that all work?
Yeah, well, they would what's called merge. If he's convicted, he can't be convicted of two counts of murder two, a count of murder one, when there's only one victim. But they're in there so that the jury has alternatives. If the jury decides that he indeed is responsible for causing the death of Thompson, then the question is, with what state of mind did he cause the death? And it can be, and not in this case, but in a range of things, it could be that you were negligent in causing the death. It could be that you were reckless. It could be that you acted with intent. Here they say acted with intent to terrorize, it was an act of terrorism. The jury has a range of possibilities in matching what the state of mind was with the conduct. And that's why they're all in there, to give the jury the a full range in which to make that decision. They did the same thing with, I think, was it the gun charges? I mean, they've got charges up the kazoo here. And I haven't looked at the gun charges here, but I suspect it's the same sort of thing, depending on what you think he was doing with the gun. It could be second degree, it could be third degree. They'll merge because you can only have one conviction for murder per death.
We're obviously looking at family photos, and look, I mean, we always talk about this. The family here are victims, I believe, even though that's a strange comment from the mother. Obviously, Brian Thompson's family, but you know that the mother and father here, Luigi Mangione's mother and father and his siblings, They just got to be out of their minds reeling. And obviously this guy, Brian Thompson, has two sons and was already laid to rest. Julie Frew, one of our amazing, exceptional mods and much more, I see it going federal. That way, I mean, there potentially could be a death penalty.
At the federal charge. Level, that's right.
Yeah. So, Joe, what about that? I mean, what would take this to kind of a federal nexus and have it be played out in federal court?
Well, number one, there has to be a federal statute, and here there is. There's a federal statute for causing a death through an act of terrorism. Generally speaking, even today, we consider in the United States that crime is a state issue, not a federal issue. So to make it a federal issue, you have to have some sort of connection that pulls it up. You rob a bank of the United States. You are caught distributing drugs that you took from one state into another state. So you cross state lines. That would trigger a federal prosecution. You kill a federal official. You attempt to assassinate the president. All those bring it to federal. Practically, what happens is, most of the time, the great majority of the time, even when there's the potential of a federal prosecution, also, it still stays at the state level. The U.S. attorney, through the attorney general, has a policy statement as to when it would decide that a case warranted moving to the federal level. And I haven't seen that they've done anything here yet, but it's certainly possible. That this case, they might consider that they want to move up. That U.S. Attorney's office in New York is extremely busy at the moment, this would just take it over the top. I mean, they would have major cases with more moving parts than I can't think of a time when a jurisdiction would have that much going on all at once.
And by the way, we're doing one of those stories again tonight. The FBI agent testified here in Miami against the Alexander brothers. They are accused of Diddy-like behavior against at least 40 women, probably many more. They were indicted in Miami on federal and state charges. There's three brothers, a set of twins, and then a third brother. The third is charged federally. So we're going to be covering that because there's new news with that tonight. So that'll be 7 p.m. Eastern time. When I made this commitment to breaking news, I didn't know it was going to be every 5 minutes when I made this commitment to breaking news.
I was thinking about you. This is not only full time, it's like a 24/7. There's no opportunity to even breathe. When you have more than one jurisdiction involved, it can get really complicated really quickly. Hopefully there's a lot of interaction and a lot of communication and group agreement going forward. But you can. One of the issues that can come up is states sometimes have legal rules that are a higher standard than what the federal constitution requires. The FBI only has to comply with the federal constitution. There's not usually a federal statute. States have more to do. And so when you have more than, let's say you have this FBI and state or city law enforcement, when they're in it together, the FBI might be following rules that would make it difficult for, let's say, a confession to get in or evidence to get in because that state has a higher standard of what needs to be done. So they've got to coordinate to be sure, because right now they don't know which jurisdiction is going to be doing it. Here, the thing I thought was not a surprise, but a difference, is Bragg said that Mangione may waive extradition, waive his right to oppose extradition. He was going to get back to New York one way or the other. Extradition is kind of a holdover from when states didn't get along at all. And they might not want to cooperate with another state that wanted to prosecute one of their citizens. And so extradition gave the state that had the person some opportunity to say, no, we're not going to let you have him. Today, it's pro forma. States If you commit a crime in New York and you're being held in Pennsylvania, it's going to be pro forma. You're going to end up in New York. And so it's a little unusual for a defendant to fight extradition. It's only going to mean he's in a Pennsylvania jail for a few more days, maybe a couple of weeks, a month at the most, before he's in New York.
Yeah. This is an interesting question, maybe putting the cart ahead of the horse, but I'm curious myself. People are thinking, you know, he's going to get evaluated and then they're going to try some sort of insanity defense. What do you think, Joe? It's going to be hard here because it seems hard, but
you know, the question is, what defense is he going to have? I mean, often if you're on the defense side, the question isn't, is this a good defense, but is there anything else we can say? Here he's on tape shooting this victim, Brian Thompson, in the back. That makes it pretty hard. I mean, to say it's not I is going to be extraordinarily difficult. To say I didn't mean to do it is going to be extraordinarily difficult. I mean, so the two things that you would generally contest is not me, I didn't do it, I didn't intend to do it. It seems to me I can't believe you could have a successful prosecution doing that. So then you have to look around for something in insanity. I mean, certainly one could say that anybody who acts this way is not acting normally. But in insanity defense requires more than that. The insanity defense says that you have to know the difference between right and wrong, and you have to be and you have to know that what you did was wrong. It's a little hard to believe he'd be able to succeed on that either.
Yeah. By the way, so this means no cameras for Luigi Mangione in New York, no cameras for Sean Diddy Combs, no cameras for the Alexander brothers. And I feel like I'm missing one right now. But this is a funny comment, best comment of the day. No offense, to everyone else. If you're joining late, Luigi Mangione's grandmother, and I do not know the details. COE yeah. was reading this to me the other night. She put a clause, they're very wealthy, generational wealth. She put a clause in there that trust can't go to someone convicted of a felon. So people are asking for their own clauses. Dear Santa, please bring clauses. So another question, Joe, and I'm going to go through. We haven't even gone through what they've really had to say, and I'm gearing up again for the 7 o'clock show. But what about, he took these weapons, these IDs, these things he used to perpetrate this crime per the NYPD, and he crossed the state lines. Isn't that also a federal nexus?
Yeah, crossing the state line is definitely a federal nexus. And that's what I said, in a drug prosecution, the way that the feds can prosecute, let's say, drug distribution is because they say the drug crossed state lines or the person who's distributing the drugs crossed state lines. So, yeah, that's a federal nexus. But the federal nexus on that would go to the passport, the gun charge, the fleeing to escape, you know, to avoid prosecution. With regard to the killing itself, now he did go from one state to another to do it, but that would be much harder. That would be a much harder federal nexus. The one that I think they would use is terrorism, because terrorism is a federal concern, not simply a state concern.
Yeah, Joe, it's a good thing you're a law professor. You're supposed to know this. So I was going to say, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if pleading insanity, does he first have to admit to the crime?
Well, he has to admit to the crime, because you can't say I did it, but I was, you can't say I was insane without saying I did it because I was insane. So, yeah. I mean, sometimes defendants try what they call alternative defenses that are inconsistent. I didn't do it, but if I did do it, I was insane when I did it. That's extraordinarily difficult. Juries are not the least bit inclined to be sympathetic to a defense that goes like that. I didn't, but if I did, here's why. So, yeah, he'll have to admit to the crime if he goes that way. But he may be willing to, you know, embrace the fact that he killed Thompson. I mean, he may see this, the trial, as another opportunity to espouse whatever it is, the political positions that he's taking. And so not want to deny that he committed the crime. Yeah. Don't know what it will be, but that wouldn't be unreasonable.
Can you guys kick Are You Serious out of here? He's saying, I'm not going to say what he's saying, but You heard the police commissioner, I'm going to get to that, talking about no one should be looking at this guy as a hero. He murdered a guy in cold blood, this guy who's got two children who are walking around, I'm sure, in a daze, just don't understand what's going on. I mean, they're older, but literally understand what's going on, but figuratively do not know what's happening. And then you've got this guy's family, and look, his sisters are probably, you know, just the father, the mother, they're just, thank you, Julie Frew. Their lives are just ripped apart here. So, Professor Joe Petito, this is the part that's interesting to me from a legal perspective. Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, said that this was, and this is going to cause the controversy here, this was meant to cause shock and terror, happened in one of the busiest areas of Manhattan, a brazen, targeted, premeditated attack. All these things. How does the law look at, because it's a little more subjective now, because now we're talking about acts of terror, when some people are going to say people get gunned down in the streets of New York City every day. So how do you interpret this legally and come to this conclusion?
Yeah, well, when you're talking about state of mind, you're often talking about what we would call circumstantial evidence. Unless a defendant comes and says, I did it and here's why I did it, you're always looking for other things that allow you to decide what was the state of mind. And most of the time it's, if I did what he did, could I have done it without this, without intending to do this, without wanting this? And the difference here is when when you're on the streets of New York and you shoot someone in broad daylight, you're not doing it because you want to make a statement. You're not doing it because you want the world to know that you're shooting this person and killing this person because of some other, larger viewpoint you have. It is different. I mean, think about all the people who get killed in any city. It's not being, as I said before, it's being done because I want to, I'm mugging him and I want the money. I'm doing it because I want custody of the kids. I'm doing it because he had an affair with my wife. I'm doing, and you name the reason, but it's not a reason that's global in the way that this one appears to be. And yeah, that's what moves it over. Now you have to prove it, but that's the kind of thing that they're going to use to prove it.
Yeah. Kelly Wentworth, he now is a high powered attorney. So is his family paying for it? I'm sure they are. And they've got a lot of money and they're going to have a lot less money when this is all said and done. But they do have, from what it seems, like generational wealth, as I was saying. Buttercup 203. Why didn't Luigi's grandmother or mother get him the help? These are questions that I guess we're going to find out in time. Even put him in a psych unit. It's not so easy. He's an adult, 26 years old. And, I'm sure they tried.
Well, and I didn't see anything, and if somebody in the chat knows, or Joel, you do, just obviously correct me, but I didn't see anything that suggested that he had committed other crimes before this.
No record. He has zero, nothing on his record here.
And I also didn't see anything that suggested that maybe, and we're going to see maybe erratic behavior. Something had to be going on for the mother to say what the mother said. But, put yourself in the situation of that family. You've got somebody who's saying things who should be seeing, getting professional help. It's difficult to figure out when it is or how it is you urge somebody to get professional help unless you can show that he's no longer able to make decisions for himself and you can get an involuntary commitment. And that's pretty hard. Hard to do. You try talking the person into doing. You try to encourage. You may set up appointments. I don't know that we know that he didn't seek help. It looked like he didn't. It looks like he left. And that's one worry you'd have, I think, as a parent. If I push too much and I'm worried about him, at least if he's here, I can watch. He may just leave. And that's exactly what he did. He left. And then they had no ability to organize it. In 2020 hindsight, it's easy to say they should have done more. Very easy to say, and we don't even know what the information was they had. But in real time, that's very difficult for people to figure out when should they intervene, what should they do, how should they do it, and what the consequences will be of doing it in terms of the family relationship or in terms of the individual you're trying to help. I think it's very difficult.
Agnifilo, the attorney, is going to have a tough time with this one. That is for sure. So Alvin Bragg revealed some of the details. I'm going to go through this a little more quickly now, and then we'll be back at 7. But Alvin Bragg went on to say, I think actually this may have been this was still Alvin Bragg speaking. He talked about the details that Luigi Mangione arrived to New York City back on November 24th. He immediately checked into that hostel that we knew about under the fake ID from New Jersey under the name Mark Rosario. He said on the day of the crime, he waited for 1 hour outside right there on the street. When he saw Thompson and he saw Brian Thompson cross the street, he crossed himself. He had a ghost gun, shoots him with a ghost gun. It was a fatal shot to the back, one to the calf. And then Alvin Bragg says he fled northeast on his bike, then hopped in a cab. Then you fast forward to December 9th. He spotted in a McDonald's restaurant. Again, he had a mask on, and some people say they probably wouldn't have realized it was him if he had gone in there without the mask. Then Alvin Bragg went on a bit of a tangent that he said was important about ghost guns, saying that they're really increasing and proliferating, that they are unserialized guns, but they are just as deadly, pointing obviously to Brian Thompson. He is expected now, Luigi Mangione will be on this on Thursday to appear. There's no cameras in PA either, but he is expected to appear in court on Thursday. There's going to be a preliminary hearing, and that is going to be followed immediately by an extradition hearing. However, sources are telling ABC News that he's going to waive his extradition, which means he could be back in New York City for the holidays, for Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, you name it. He'll be here. But Joe Pituto, what should we expect in a preliminary hearing? We're not going to be able to see it. And then there's a very good chance the extradition hearing won't happen, because usually these sources are on the money for the most part, and he'll probably just be extradited. So just tell us a little bit about that preliminary hearing and then the process of extradition.
Yeah, states, preliminary hearing is used in different states to mean different things. Often it's what's called a probable cause hearing. So the judge decides that there's enough evidence that the state is presenting to decide that a crime was committed, here it would be a murder, and that this individual committed the crime. In some jurisdictions, preliminary hearing means there was no grand jury indictment, and you actually have a mini hearing where the state presents evidence and the defense gets to cross-examine. This doesn't sound like what this is. This one sounds like it's going to be, gee, here's enough evidence to show he did it, and the crime was committed, and this is the person who committed the crime. And that's what allows you then to hold a person and move forward to a formal charge. This doesn't sound like it's the actual formal charge, but I don't know enough about how Pennsylvania does it, because, as I say, the term, it covers a lot of different things depending on the place where the prosecution is.
Yeah.
Extradition. What could happen is, and this is what was going on in the brothers in Florida, the Alexander brothers, where they were given a bail release, mm-hmm. But they're not going anywhere. What happens is, if you've got two jurisdictions, a state could be state, federal, it could be two states, and I'm the place that has the defendant, and you are the place where the charges are going to be brought. In this case, Pennsylvania has charges and New York has charges. In the Alexander case, Florida has charges and New York has charges. Doesn't have to be, it can be just one, the outside jurisdiction. What they do, the outside jurisdiction initially sends a warrant saying, please arrest this guy, he's wanted for charges in our jurisdiction. And so Pennsylvania would have been able to arrest, even if they didn't have charges on their own, they would have been able to arrest Mangione on the charges out of New York to hold him. And then what happens is New York would go forward, and that's what they did, to indict. And then they would request that Pennsylvania they would send a detainer. So Pennsylvania would be told, if you're ready to release them, we now have formal charges. We want him. So don't release him. We'll come and get him. And that's exactly what's happening in Florida right now. Don't release. We're going to come and get him. The extradition is only that since he's not in New York, he has a right to say, you shouldn't be able to send me to New York. Their process was bad. There's no probable cause in any of the charges in New York. So, you know, because the state can't just simply say to a police department in another state, we want that person, send them to me. They've got to show they've got a reason in law and a right to ask that that person be sent. So that's what the extradition hearing would be. What would happen is now there's the New York indictment, which shows that there's probable cause. It would be entered in the Pennsylvania court. They'd have a hearing. It would be pro forma. You know, is this actually an indictment? Somebody could claim, hey, this is a forgery. It didn't happen. Or, you know, gee, the grand jury was wrong, which will get you nowhere. And then the hearing, at the end of the hearing, there would be a decision that New York has a right to this defendant, has a right to Luigi Mangione, and then Pennsylvania would agree to release him, and New York would send law enforcement up to get him.
Mm-hmm. By the way, welcome to Tiny Grandma. I wonder if she's got clauses for her grandchildren. inside joke for Tiny Grandma, if she didn't hear the beginning of the show, but... Commissioner Jessica Tisch also got up and spoke. She comes from a very renowned family, the Tisch family. I think they own the Giants. They at one point were part of CBS. I don't know if they're all necessarily related, but I believe so. So Commissioner Tisch got up and she said that the unsealing of this grand jury indictment brings us, meaning New York City, one step closer to getting justice. This underscores the primacy of the rule of law. She thanked NYPD detectives for relentlessly viewing surveillance video. They were able to find these images. Those images led to an elderly citizen at McDonald's who then flagged down a McDonald's employee. The two of them decided to call police. And, you know, we know the rest of the story. Arresting officer was on the job 6 months, which is wild. We'll never have a bigger story than that, I don't think. But then this is sort of the interesting part. The commissioner took the opportunity to say that anyone who finds this remotely, you know, glamorous or heroic is vile. She said that since the shooting that she personally has seen just a shocking and appalling display by some people in the public who are supporting him, and said they're looking as though Brian Thompson is some sort of sick trophy. So she had a lot of things to say. She also talked about ghost guns. But Joe Pituto here, and then we're going to wrap in a couple of minutes because we're coming back at 7, but Luigi Mangione, this is as of yesterday, his supporters, if you can believe that, we're talking about an alleged killer here. His supporters have donated more than $130,000. People are asking, well, how are they going to pay? Maybe this way, to his defense funds through a crowdfunding site called Give, Send, Go. Now, GoFundMe is the big one, and they have, I think, either put a stop or returned any funds or whatever they do. But this website is Give, Send, Go. What do you think of that, Joe Pituto, that this guy is accused of murdering one of the top executives in the country and now has tens of thousands of dollars flowing in to help support his defense? Have you ever heard of anything remotely close to this in your years?
No. I think she was right. It is shocking and appalling. It's incredible that people can not only actually believe, but are willing to spend money to support the belief that it's okay to kill somebody, much less somebody who's being killed for the position he holds and not anything directly related to anything he did with regard to this person. It's absolutely incredible. And I don't think they'd feel that way if their father was or mother was the head of a company and their father or mother ended up being the target. I don't think they'd feel that way if some random shooter on the street shot and killed a family member, or somebody shot and killed a family member because it was a messy divorce. So how it is that they can see this one is somehow different is just beyond me. I still think it's a fringe. You know, you can have a lot of noise on social media, and you can get, you know, what, some people to send money. But in a how many people do we have in this country now? Close to 300 million?
Yeah.
250, whatever it is. So, I mean, it's still a fringe, but it's still amazing that there's even this fringe.
Yeah, it's a vocal minority for sure. I think the vast majority of people think that it is probably a really bad idea to be donating to an alleged killer. So I think most people still have their common sense about them. But you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of smart people, rational people who are saying, I mean, at the very least, maybe something will change with the healthcare system, which I've said many times is definitely in need of a lot of fixing. Someone was asking, is it going to be held at Rikers? And I believe the answer to that is yes, unless there's a security reason, which makes me wonder. Look at this, Bree, right? Helping me along here. What's up, Bree? Maybe tomorrow we do a show with former inmates about what life is going to be like for this guy behind bars as he awaits trial. Let us know if you want to do that. I'm also working on a follow-up to Ellen Greenberg, but I want to do it right. And again, tonight, the Alexander brothers, if you don't know them, Israeli, but born and raised, I believe, I don't know where they're born, but they're raised in Miami. You've got Alone, Oren, and Tal. And then the kicker to this is there's a cousin, Ohad Fisherman, who happens to live in Karm's building, and he's wanted. And all these guys just got married. This guy, Ohad, is reportedly on his way back from a honeymoon in Asia and is going to turn himself in. The other guy, Oren, who one woman said he looked possessed when he was attacking her, his wife is due any day, and he was asking the judge, can you please get me out of here so I can be with my my pregnant wife? So there's a lot of crazy in the world. Yeah.
Is Diddy in Rikers now?
Diddy is at the Metropolitan Detention Center, which is a federal crime. So this again goes, that's
right.
Great.
You're right. Forgot.
Yeah. By the way, I've heard that this is not true, that Israel does extradite. I don't know the official law there, but yeah, the cousin too. Karm talks. I was asking Karm the other day. Karm's like, yeah, I talked to him. Like, he would know who I am.
I told Karm, might be where grandmother has a clause in the trust.
I told Karm this is the first time you should be ecstatic. You're 85. I don't think he was interested. So she said, how do I know? I don't know. So anyway, what is this?
I thought that the new police chief, Tish, isn't she new on the job?
Yeah, she's very new on the job.
Great way for her to start too with a case like this after you take over.
She's very new on the job, and she is very intelligent. Harvard everything, Harvard law, Harvard business, Harvard this, Harvard that. Obviously, a pretty smart person. But so is this guy, and who knew? And by the way, this guy was also a valedictorian. No one talks about that. He comes from a working class family, and look, worked his way up. Again, I know a lot of people have a problem with the healthcare industry and making money off of the healthcare industry. But this guy, from all intents and purposes, worked his way up from a blue collar family to making $10 million or so a year.
If the stories that I saw are correct, he had real bad back pain, which is awful, I'm sure, because. Mm-hmm. I think if it's back, you can't move at all without setting it off. You can't raise your hand. You can't do anything without setting it off. You can't sit. You can't stand. You can't walk. But I saw something that suggested that it might have been the result of an operation that wasn't done properly, and that a doctor had said they could have done another surgery and maybe corrected it. But that aside, you know, to go after an insurer because your doctor didn't do the surgery right, or because you have pain from a surgery. I mean, whatever you want to say about the healthcare industry or insurance generally, or, you know, medical assistance generally, we're not perfect. And sometimes the thing that you have can't be fixed, and backs are something that often are not fixable for people. So, I mean, these people who are sending money and making a hero worship out of him, is that okay? Every time you have back pain or something, it's okay to go shoot somebody and say, gee, it's the healthcare industry that's the cause? I mean, it's just absolutely incredible.
I agree with you. If you appreciate the content, you like the breaking news, please hit the like button. That's what it's there for. Please subscribe. Also, a reminder, this Sunday, Ruth Markell, that is our original true crime story. She is the mother of Dan Markell, who was murdered in cold blood in a murder-for-hire plot in 2014. And his ex-mother-in-law is going to stand trial soon, and his ex-brother-in-law is a convicted killer now, serving his sentence in South Dakota because so many people are after him here in Florida. But anyway, Ruth Markell will be here live at JAFCO, J-A-F-C-O, J-A-F-C-O. I've got it up on my socials. On Twitter, I'm at Podcast STS. Instagram, Surviving the Survivor. And what's a new thing? I just joined Blue Sky. It's like a Twitter offshoot. But anyway, I created an account on Blue Sky, and I'll be posting on there as well. It's infinite. You can spend your whole day just posting on social media. Sarah Terry says none of his friends saw this coming. Apparently, his mother saw it coming because she said that she's not that surprised. It might be something he would do. That was the headline for me today when NYPD contacted the mother, who hadn't heard from him since July, and then filed a missing persons report in November. The headline again, though, finally, is the grand jury has indicted this guy, Luigi Mangione, on first degree, second degree, and terrorism charges. He will be in court on Thursday. We'll be following it closely Thursday. We'll be doing a show about this probably Thursday evening for sure. And we're still working tonight, 7, whatever day it is, the Alexander brothers. A huge thanks, as always, to the professor, Joe Petuto, and to all of you for tuning in. Please spread the word about STS. Love you, America, and love you, everyone, wherever you are. And let's think of Brian Thompson's family today. We'll see you at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard.